It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Libya's parliament meets as militia violence grips the North African nation. U.S. hosts Africa Summit, urging heads of state to show political tolerance. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Libya's newly elected parliament held its first session Monday, not in Tripoli, but in the eastern city Tobruk, 1,500 kilometers away from fighting between rival militia vying for control of Tripoli's international airport. VOA's Sharon Bain reports.
Libya's Justice Minister Salah al-Margani on Monday called for unity in the country and an end to the violence. He says the transitional government is proposing an urgent vision, at the core of which is to use all means possible to produce a balanced situation in Libya. Hundreds have died in the recent struggle for power between warring militia groups, the military and breakaway military factions. The fighting has forced most countries to evacuate their nationals. Violence in the capital and in Benghazi has made those cities so unsafe that al-Margani and lawmakers from Libya's newly elected parliament were forced to hold their first session Monday in the eastern city of Tobruk. Islamist groups who lost seats in the last parliamentary elections boycotted Monday's session. Libya's central government also has been unable to protect its significant oil and gas sectors from rebel forces. Unable to directly export themselves, militia commanders are taking those assets hostage for increased economic and political leverage. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Washington.
At the U.S.-Africa summit in Washington Monday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry urged participants of civil society groups to push for greater democracy and individual rights in their countries.
Empowered civil society is the foundation of every successful democracy, here in the United States, in Africa, and around the world. Because in the end, our most enduring relationships, most consequential relationships, are not with one particular government at one moment in time. It's not with those who are in power for the short run. The legacy is really shaped by the people of a country and the people of a continent, the people of Africa, who stand on principle for the long haul and who are increasingly connected to the world around them and who therefore aspire to greater and greater set of opportunities.
Mr. Kerry said the United States believes when people can trust their government, a society is more prosperous and stable and less likely to descend into violence and extremism. President Obama is scheduled to address a U.S.-Africa Business Forum today and take part in sessions focused on economic growth, regional security, and good governance on Wednesday. Washington is set to unveil about $1 billion in business deals, more funding for peacekeeping, and billions for food and power programs during the three-day summit. On the sidelines of the Washington meeting, South Africa's President Jacob Zuma told the National Press Club Monday that Africa's economy is becoming increasingly interdependent.
We are working to integrate our economies and to boost regional trade. We are promoting industrialization and power generation. We are developing transport infrastructure to get our goods both to overseas markets and to the new internal markets that we are creating.
The South African leader also called for renewal of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, that gives duty-free access to billions of dollars of African exports for another 15 years. The current act expires next year. The World Health Organization now says nearly 900 people in West Africa have died from the worst outbreak of the Ebola virus, with 1,600 confirmed cases of the disease since it was first detected in Guinea in March. Liberia and Sierra Leone have deployed troops to quarantine affected communities, while some Liberian healthcare workers are refusing to work because of inadequate safety measures to deal with the virus. Authorities in Nigeria Monday reported the country's second confirmed case of Ebola, a doctor who treated the first patient who died last month in Lagos. A New York hospital is testing a man who visited West Africa with possible symptoms of Ebola. Officials at Mount Sinai Medical Center say the man suffers from a high fever and gastrointestinal problems, was admitted to the emergency room early Monday and quickly isolated. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The U.S.-Africa Summit enters its second day today, Tuesday.
So I say unabashedly, we want and we will work hard to get more American companies to invest in Africa. We also want more African companies to invest here in the United States.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. A U.S. Congresswoman will host African leaders and U.S. business officials today, Tuesday. We'll examine why Zimbabwe is one of the countries not invited to this week's U.S.-Africa Summit. South Sudan government and rebel leaders resume yet another round of peace talks amid renewed fighting. And Liberia experiences a logjam of Ebola-related dead bodies.
What you are getting is distance even from the community that these individuals should not be buried in the communities in which they reside.
Louis Brown is Liberia's information minister, and could a vaccine to cure Ebola be in the making? Those stories plus Mark Omar's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The three-day U.S.-Africa Summit enters its second day today, Tuesday, as the Obama administration works to strengthen ties with Africa. At one of the forums yesterday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told about 50 African leaders that the United States is ready to strengthen its business ties with Africa. As Pam Dawkins reports, Kerry said Africa's economic growth benefits both Africa and the United States.
About 50 presidents and other top officials from across Africa are in Washington for the Africa Leaders Summit. Kicking off the series of events, Secretary of State John Kerry says a dramatic transformation is possible in Africa, and it's possible within the next few years.
Prosperity can actually replace poverty, and cooperation can actually triumph over conflict.
A number of the world's fastest-growing economies are in Africa, yet U.S. businesses have generally been hesitant to invest. He urged African ministers to embrace free market ideals and U.S.-Africa cooperation.
So I say unabashedly, we want and we will work hard to get more American companies to invest in Africa. We also want more African companies to invest here in the United States, and there's no reason that they shouldn't.
But he also called for greater transparency and a commitment to fight corruption.
To do so will take courage. And yes, it sometimes means assuming risks. But fighting corruption lifts more than a country's balance sheet. Transparency and accountability attract greater investment. Transparency and accountability create a more competitive marketplace.
Kerry is holding individual meetings with at least 8 African leaders on Monday. President Obama is due to address a U.S.-Africa Business Forum on Tuesday. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
An advisor to U.S. House of Representatives member Karen Bass says the Congresswoman will today, Tuesday, host African leaders and American business officials at a forum of growth and opportunity in Africa as part of the ongoing U.S.-Africa Summit. Dan Roth tells reporter Peter Clotty that the meeting will discuss the future of U.S.-Africa economic relations and the upcoming discussion in Congress to renew the Africa Growth and Opportunity Agreement, known as AGOA.
She is hosting 3 panels with leaders from some of Africa's highest economic leaders to talk with Americans about how we forge and strengthen that bond between the United States and Africa. We have increased trade between the United States and Africa, and it's benefited both the United States and Africa with increased jobs and increased prosperity. And we really want to grow on that and have an open and honest discussion about how we can do that and really levy up the importance of the countries of the African continent for the United States.
How will they explore possibilities of strengthening bilateral, deepening bilateral and multilateral relations between Washington and the continent?
Absolutely. So one of the greatest tools that we have is the Africa Growth and Opportunity Agreement, or AGOA. And it was forged when President Clinton was president, and it really has helped to increase trade between the United States and Africa. And AGOA is set to expire in 2015, and that's AGOA as we know it. And so really this is a wonderful opportunity for us to really have a great dialogue of what is working under the agreement and, frankly, how the agreement can be better. Congress will very soon begin the part of discussing the reauthorization of the trade agreement. And so we want to get from people from Africa really what they've learned on the ground so we can build on that. So when we go to reauthorize AGOA, that it's stronger and is actually working better for the continent of Africa and for the United States.
What should be the takeaway of this meeting, this Tuesday's meeting?
Well, really this meeting, it's of 15 people, both from the United States and Africa, and it includes economic officers from the African Union. It includes former heads of state from Africa. It also includes business administrators from the United States. And so really the discussion is, what are some tangible ways as we move into the discussion of AGOA that it will be better? So really it is and I think what is one of the wonderful things about AGOA, it is one of the few both bipartisan and also where the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate are in agreement that it is successful. And so we know that we want to renew it, but the real question is, how do we improve upon it? And also that we don't wait until the last minute, but also we don't see the September 2015 as when we start the discussion, but how do we make sure that we renew it well ahead of time so that it doesn't run out and that businesses don't have the uncertainty that they might have if we wait until the last minute.
So how will this discussion help in the possible approval or extension of AGOA? Because a lot of African countries have been calling for its extension. It appears the process is a bit slow for them, and these are concerns they've expressed. So how will this help in that directive?
And so it's really to change the mindset, and that's where the summit meets policy and is really bringing together, is that we are seeing and talking and really thinking about Africa.
Dan Rolfe is Communications Director and Policy Advisor to U.S. House of Representatives member Karen Bass. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Washington, D.C. This week's U.S.-Africa Summit is an effort by the Obama administration to strengthen American ties with the continent of Africa. But Zimbabwe, which desperately needs investment from abroad, is not represented because of President Robert Mugabe's human rights record. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare on what that means for Zimbabwe.
Talking to African journalists by telephone ahead of the meeting, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield said the summit was a historic event.
The theme of the summit is investing in the next generation. We think this reflects the common ambitions that we share with the people and governments of Africa to leave our nations better for future generations by making gains in peace and security and good governance and economic development.
But one of those missing that fruitful discussion is Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe. The 90-year-old Zimbabwean leader is subject to U.S. travel and financial sanctions because of his poor human rights record and history of alleged election rigging. Pezisai Ruhanya, who heads the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, says Zimbabwe stands to lose a lot by not being represented at this summit.
So the meeting in Washington is important for international trade among those countries that are meeting Obama, and also countries that are looking for foreign direct investment. They will be interacting with American conglomerates and international business institutions that want to invest in developing economies such as Nigeria is now the leading economy in Africa, followed by South Africa. So it's important that those countries meet, particularly in America, where the heartbeat of international business is.
Zimbabwe's economy has alternated between depression and weak growth for nearly 15 years, ever since Mr. Mugabe's government began to forcibly drive white commercial farmers off their land. Foreign companies are generally reluctant to invest in the country because of political turmoil and Mr. Mugabe's nationalistic economic policies. Zimbabwe's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Christopher Mutswangwa agrees with Ruhanya that the summit is crucial for Africa. But when it comes to Zimbabwe, he says the government is at peace not being present for the discussions.
Of course, we as Zimbabwe, we are not invited. We have
no misgivings whether we are, when America decides to exclude us. It's a country which has never been comfortable with an assertive African nationalist. We brook no strictures from anybody, including America.
The Obama administration was one of the Western governments that refused to recognize Mr. Mugabe's re-election in July 2013, which the opposition MDC party says was rigged. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, August 5th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Liberian officials say they are working hard to correct the problems that have led to the backlog of the collection and burial of Ebola-related dead bodies. Some local media reports say an overwhelmed healthcare system has led to dead bodies being dumped in some communities and left unburied for as many as 5 days. One report said as many as 37 dead bodies were found Sunday in one of the boroughs of the capital, Monrovia. The pileup of uncollected and unburied dead bodies has led to protests in some communities. This comes as the World Health Organization said Monday that the death toll from the Ebola outbreak in West Africa has reached 900, with 255 deaths in Liberia. Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown tells me President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has ordered the cremation of Ebola-related dead bodies to relieve the logjam.
We're pleased that people are beginning to follow the directive of the government not to bury their own. The point we're making is when the retriever teams go into this community to retrieve bodies, usually they follow the safety protocols and they attempt to bury these bodies after the protocols are exhausted in the communities so family members can have knowledge of where their loved ones were buried. What we're getting is resistance even from the community that these individuals should not be buried in the communities in which they reside. And therefore, it has caused a backlog and a slow pace at which retriever teams have been in action. And so on Sunday, the president confirmed a decision for cremation of the bodies.
So you are saying that the government has been a little bit slow, or the medical people have been a little bit slow in picking up the bodies?
Well, yes, there has been a slower pace because there was a backlog being developed, because as people were picking up bodies, communities were not permitting them to be buried in their communities. And so it had a backlog of bodies with no place to be buried, and therefore resulted to cremation, which, you know, is not a part of our culture, but we have had to do to adjust to these concerns, to lower the resistance, and to find a way to accelerate the access of retriever teams and the rate at which they're able to respond to the population.
According to one account I read, there's a hotline that people are supposed to call. And whenever that hotline is called, some people have complained that they are not getting through.
That is a possibility, but we've begun to address that. We had hotlines from at least two of the major GSM service providers. On Sunday, we enter into an additional arrangement to increase each line to each number to be able to accommodate an additional 30 lines. The situation is of such that more and more people are making calls, more and more responses are needed. In fact, we made an appeal for volunteers to come out today. That calling system, it was directly up until yesterday under the Ministry of Health. We've removed that into another facility to accommodate volunteers. People are volunteering to answer and to get the message out to retriever centers.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. While there is currently no cure or vaccine for Ebola, Dr. Anthony Fauci of the U.S. National Institutes of Health said Monday that a vaccine is being developed and could soon go to trial. Dr. Thomas Geisberg researched the deadly virus for more than two decades as a professor at the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. Johnson. Guysborough talks to Ricky Shryak about the possibilities for a future vaccine and treatment for Ebola.
There are 4 or 5 different vaccines now that can completely protect lab animals against Ebola. And my guess is it's one of the vaccines that NIH has been working on.
What has been stopping us from having a vaccine all this time? And why is it different now?
The problem and the challenges in the past has been there's a very small global market for an Ebola vaccine. So, you know, there really hasn't been a financial incentive for a large pharmaceutical company to make an Ebola vaccine.
It seems quite fast. It only took a few months to say, okay, we can have a vaccine in September that we'll be able to test.
I do think that certainly this outbreak being the largest Ebola outbreak on record has raised awareness. And I think certainly there's been an increased concern, and particularly in the United States. So I think that that has facilitated or enhanced the possibilities of developing a vaccine, or basically fast-tracking the process a little bit. I still think it's probably very optimistic to think that a licensed vaccine would be available that quickly. I think more likely perhaps a vaccine that could be used for compassionate use, or, you know, in an emergency situation, is perhaps more of what is being discussed.
When you say emergency in situation, do you mean right now people in Freetown and Monrovia and Conakry would be getting this vaccine?
I'm not necessarily saying or suggesting that. I think the idea of vaccinating different populations is controversial. I think a well-characterized vaccine that perhaps could be used for, you know, first responders or medical staff is maybe a place to start, but I mean, this is all speculation.
And how is your research going? Was it in March that you guys received new funding?
So on the 1st of March, we received a grant from the National Institutes of Health here in the United States to develop what we think are 3 of the most promising post-exposure treatments against Ebola. And we picked these 3 because they're the 3 that have shown the most success in protecting non-human primates against Ebola.
Is there any talk of using your treatments yet on any of the people who have come down with Ebola?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it had some increased awareness. There's been a lot of interest. And the whole issue of treating the cases is pretty complex. And we have corporate partners, and I really don't want to go into any discussion on that. One of the vaccines that we developed, that it can either be used as a preventive vaccine or it can be used as a post-exposure treatment. So this vaccine actually was used in a compassionate use situation back, I think, around 2010, where a worker in a laboratory in Germany had an accident with Ebola, and the vaccine was used as a post-exposure treatment.
That was Dr. Thomas Guysbert, a professor at the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Galveston, Texas. Warring factions in South Sudan say they are committed to forging a peace deal to end more than 7 months of fighting as government and rebel delegates began another round of talks on Monday in Addis Ababa. As viewers Gabe Jaslow reports, an early sign of tension emerged on Monday as the government criticized mediators for not enforcing past agreements.
Representatives from South Sudan's government and the rebel opposition are meeting to make another push for a peace deal in their country. At least 10,000 people have been killed and more than 1 million displaced in South Sudan since the conflict between supporters of President Salva Kiir and his political rival Riek Machar descended into fighting and inter-ethnic violence in December. Past ceasefire agreements between the two sides, mediated by the East African group IGAD, have been violated soon after being signed. Speaking at the opening of the talks, a representative of South Sudan's government, Niall Dang Niall, blamed IGAD mediators for failing to hold the opposition, known as the SPLMA in opposition, accountable for past violations.
Unfortunately, we are yet to see any of those consequences materialize. If anything, the lack of consequences has only emboldened the SPLMA in opposition to step up its armed campaign against government forces.
The two sides have blamed each other for the collapse of previous ceasefire deals and the continuation of fighting that has centered around South Sudan's Jonglei, Unity, and Upper Nile states. Opposition Representative Diu Mathok defended the role of IGAD, which has sent teams to South Sudan to monitor the conflict.
The SPLM is committed to peaceful resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. I want to reiterate our confidence in the mediators.
Another key item on the agenda is the formation of a transitional government of national unity. A previous agreement called for the new government to be established by August 10th. That deadline is looking increasingly unlikely to be met. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. All football matches are suspended in Sierra Leone as a precaution against the spread of the deadly Ebola virus that is currently ravaging parts of the country. The Sierra Leone Football Association announced the suspension in Freetown on Monday following the declaration of a public health emergency by the country's head of state, Ernest Bai Koroma. This puts Sierra Leone's 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign in jeopardy. They are scheduled to host the Democratic Republic of Congo on the 10th of September. On a more cheerful note, FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions Nigeria outclassed the Democratic Republic of Congo 4-0 in the return leg of the Africa Under-17 Championship qualifier in Abeokuta, Ogun State, southwest Nigeria on Sunday. Consequently, Nigeria advanced to the penultimate stage of the qualifiers courtesy of a 5-0 aggregate. Guinea beat Morocco 3-1 on aggregate. Benin pipped Mali 1-0. Egypt dismissed the Republic of Congo 2-0. South Africa outclassed Tanzania 4-0. Cameroon beat Burkina Faso 2-0 as Angola edged Mozambique 3-2 and Gabon dismissed Ethiopia 3-0. Elsewhere, Senegal and Togo drew 1-1. However, Togo advanced on the away goal rule. Zambia thrashed Botswana 6-0 as Uganda beat Rwanda 7-2 on aggregate. Meanwhile, defending champions Ivory Coast, Ghana and Tunisia progressed to the next stage of the qualifiers after their opponents withdrew from the competition. Meanwhile, the stage is set for the main qualifying contest for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations after seven teams advanced from the qualifiers over the weekend. These were Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, Malawi, Rwanda, Sierra Leone and Uganda. 28 teams will battle for 15 spots up for grabs to the Nations Cup in Morocco next January. Defending champions Nigeria are seeded in Group A with Rwanda, Sudan and South Africa. Algeria, Ethiopia, Malawi and Mali are in Group B. Group C include Angola, Burkina Faso, Gabon and Lesotho. Group D comprised of Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ivory Coast and Sierra Leone. Group E has Ghana, Guinea, Togo and Uganda, while Cape Verde Islands, Mozambique, Niger and Zambia are in Group F. Group G brings together Botswana, Egypt, Senegal and Tunisia. Finally, Ghana Challenge hosts Canada at the start of their campaign at the FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Toronto today, Tuesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, August 5th.
As Nigerians are urging the federal government of Nigeria to close all her borders and is due to fight the Ebola virus in Nigeria, I wish to also say that the federal government of Nigeria should ensure that all the efforts and social agents that such a virus can be transmitted through should also be sanitized. Albert Alagbo from the Department of Public Administration, Akanebian Federal Polytechnic, Ebonyi State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. That's it for this Tuesday, August 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington saying, have a very nice day, Africa.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa. Wake, 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 wake,
wake. This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.